Local Talk is the signature local interview program on KHOI that explores people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. It celebrates the creativity, diversity, and civic spirit of our community. This interview aired on Local Talk.
Another thing that we've been hearing a lot about in the news lately is plastics. For example, Earth Day 2018 was focused on ending plastic pollution. Plastics became popular and widespread in the 60s, as was memorialized in a scene from the 1967 film The Graduate with Dustin Hoffman.
Ben. Excuse me. Mr. McGuire. Ben. Mr. McGuire.
Come with me for a minute. I want to talk to you. Excuse us, Joanne.
Of course. Yes.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Plastics.
Exactly. How do you mean?
There's a great future in plastics. Think about it. Will you think about it?
Yes, I will.
Enough said. That's a deal.
That was 1967, and now it is 2018, and plastic is everywhere, for better or worse. Starbucks was in the spotlight a few weeks ago for redesigning cups to use less plastic. And Starbucks and other businesses have committed to no longer using plastic straws. And I think most people have seen the photos of the massive plastic islands that exist in our oceans and images of aquatic animals harmed by consuming or being caught in plastic materials. Damage can be done by large items like plastic bags and six-pack rings, as well as by microplastics, which are small pieces of plastic less than 5 millimeters long. One of the problems with plastic, as we will learn from our interviewee in a minute, is that plastic degrades, that is, it breaks down into pieces, but it doesn't break down completely through decomposition. Therefore, we end up with tiny pieces of plastic in our oceans and lakes called microplastics. Shockingly, scientists recently predicted that by 2050, there would be more plastic than fish in the oceans if current trends continued. Thinking about plastics and hearing so much about them in the news, we sought out a local expert on plastics, Dr. David Grewell from the Department of Agricultural and Biosystems Engineering at ISU. When we say plastic, what do we really mean? What kinds of materials are we talking about?
Well, what we're talking about are organic materials in general that are man-made. So what we end up doing is taking some type of petrochemical feedstock, whether it's ethylene or styrene, and we polymerize those. And what we mean by that is we take these little small chemical blocks, it's like an ethylene, and we stack them together like Lego blocks. And so this makes a long polymer chain. And so these are chemicals that's never been around until man started making them. Now, polymers have been around forever, basically. I mean, we are made of polymers, your hair, your skin. Proteins are polymerized amino acids. Your DNA is a polymer. But polymers in general have been around for a very long time. But when chemists many years ago developed plastics, they were taking these synthetic monomers, these synthetic building blocks, and making them into plastics. And so in general, that's what we mean by plastics, are man-made polymers from synthetic feedstock. And they've been great, right? I mean, you look at what plastics do, the medical industry. We can't imagine some of the things that we can do without plastics in the medical industry. When you go to the grocery store, the bags that you carry out, there's very little amount of plastic in any given plastic grocery bag, but it's incredibly strong. And so these synthetic polymers and plastics do have some great properties. So they've served us very well, but obviously they've also have some downsides to them.
So what are some of the downsides, some of the problems that have been created by plastics?
Well, I think, you know, you've seen it in the news lately. It's the negative impact that these chemicals have on the environment. Because they're synthetic, they're man-made, nature has no way of figuring out how to digest these. So when they go into the environment, they last for a very, very long time. You can break them down with UV, and you see that, you know, put a piece of plastic out into the sunlight. And if it doesn't have UV stabilizers in it, it'll start to turn yellow. It'll become brittle. It'll start to break down. But it's still there to some extent. But what's worse yet is what we're seeing in the ocean plastics. You know, there's these islands, not just in the Pacific, like the one that's in the media a lot, and they're all over the globe, these islands of plastics that are floating, and fish and birds and other, you know, microbes are picking these up. And they're not able to digest them because they are synthetic and they've not been around that long compared to how long the Earth's been around. And so these microbes and animals have no idea how to deal with them, and that's having a huge negative impact on the environment.
I was in Bali last week, and I would get up about the crack of dawn and walk along the beach, and I got all these pictures of the amount of plastics along the beach. Now, by noon, we were at the conference was at a resort, and so the resorts do what they normally do. They got people coming out, you know. When I was out walking, they were showing up and they're cleaning it up. So by noon, it doesn't look too bad, but it's coming in at such a rate, they have to walk up and down the beaches continuously, keep the beaches clean. And then in the morning, you know, the trash has had all night to build up. So there's been a lot of studies, and most studies are going to indicate that it is coming from, you know, China, India, where this is blowing off the land and going into the ocean. So that is probably the biggest contributor. The next ones are going to be things like river runoff, stuff getting thrown into rivers, and the rivers feeding in the ocean. And then the last one is probably ocean vehicles of some type. Fishing nets are a big thing. You know, I saw a few of those. So that, you know, there's multiple sources, but yeah, Wind blown off land is clearly the number one.
One of the areas of research that you're involved in is using plant proteins to make new kinds of plastics that are biodegradable. So these would be still polymers, but made out of different building blocks, so they would behave or last or break down differently. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So many years ago, I had a student from Bill Graves' department come over and talk about, hey, you've been working with protein-based plastics, and he had the idea of making pots for, like, gardening pots out of protein, because they would, one, degrade their protein, and secondly, they would have high nitrogen content so they could self-fertilize. So this was a great idea, and we went through a number of different iterations until we were able to get a formulation that worked. And so these pots are now manufactured out of Minnesota, a company called Self Eco, and you can buy these on Amazon as well as in Walmart. But the big benefit, or one of the other benefits that came out of this, was something that we did not foresee. So I grew up on a farm, and if anybody does gardening, when you go and you get your tomato plant, whether it's on Main Street here on Saturday morning, and you go home and plant it, when you pull the root ball out of the plastic, the very first thing you do is you take the root ball and you start to unwind the roots, because they do this root circling where they trace around the circumference of the pot. In our case, when you plant a tomato plant or a pepper plant or whatever it is into one of our protein-based pots, the root circling is inhibited. We're not really fully understanding why that is, but it stops the root circling, and in response, the root ball produces a large number of root nodules, and they're all pointing outward and in a radial direction. And so the plants that are potted in one of these pots are actually quite a bit healthier, and we see about a 200% increase in the yield of fruit, so twice as much peppers, twice as much tomatoes. And so what that means is now you get a pot that when you go and buy your tomato plant, you dig the hole, you pull the pot off the root ball, and you have not had to add any fertilizer to it because the plant is getting the fertilizer from the protein, the nitrogen, directly from the pot. We recommend that you crush the pot at this point, so you go ahead and put it into the dirt. We don't recommend that you would plant the whole pot into the dirt, because it would still take some time for it to break down, and we don't want to do anything that would inhibit or slow down the growth of that root ball. But the pot still has some fertilizing effect, so you crush it, you put the debris into the hole, and put the tomato plant on top. And so now you've kind of got a win-win all around, right? So you got a bio-based, which is good, biodegradable, it breaks down in the soil, self-fertilizing, and on top of that, it stops root circling. Jim Schrader spearheaded a book on this. You can go out and buy an entire book on this topic and learn about how the whole technology works.
Do you think that things like plastic bags at supermarkets might someday be made out of biodegradable plastics like this?
You know, we've seen a fair amount of that. But, you know, when you talk about biodegradability, this is something that I talk quite a bit about, and it's not always received as well as what I thought it might be. And that the biodegradability is not necessarily the end solution of a lot of plastics. I think that there's a number of end-of-life treatments for plastics. I mean, clearly the first thing is recycle. Recycle, reuse, repurpose, whatever you can do to extend the life, particularly if it's a petrochemical plastic where you've put a lot of energy in recovering the feedstock, whether it's oil or natural gas, shipped it, synthesized it, you know, purified it, polymerized it, and so on. And so anything you can do to reuse, repurpose, and so on, the three R's is probably your best choice. And then, you know, at one point, though, the product probably it does have to go away in some fashion. And so we could have a couple of different options. One, right, you could throw it into the ground and hopefully it would decompose in some way, whether it's accelerated by sunlight or microbes or hydrolysis where water intersects, introduces itself into the backbone, and then it lands up coming into carbon dioxide and so on. But that may not be the best solution. You know, here in Ames, we have a trash burning facility. And so plastics are, and even bio-based plastics, are hydrocarbon-based. And so if we were to burn them, we release it back to carbon dioxide. But on top of that, we've captured the energy. Now, you can do this in a couple of different ways. You could do like we did here in Ames, where we just directly burn these some of the plastics, and it has to be done correctly such that it's safe to the environment. You don't want to be releasing dioxins and so on. And so now you've gotten rid of the plastic. You've captured the energy, and that seems like a very viable solution. You could rely on anaerobic digestion where you produce methane gas, capture the methane gas, and then burn that. So, you know, just being biodegradable is probably not the only solution that we should be looking at in terms of getting rid of plastics. But I do want to emphasize the fact that, you know, the in-between stage of reusing, repurpose, and so on has to really be considered.
And some people are also concerned with chemicals that can leach out of plastics when they're used in, say, for example, water bottles and other food kinds of containers. Do you see these new kinds of plastics eliminating or reducing that those concerns?
Well, you know, even with bioplastics, we do put additives into these. You know, the big one that you're probably talking about are PBAs that were in polycarbonate as an additive for a couple of different reasons. And yeah, those were leaching out and they were emulating hormones and causing a number of different health issues. And the industry's become aware of that and they've reduced that, if not eliminated it. When we say bioplastics, I don't know that we can conclusively say that nobody's going to put additives in. When you make these plastics, that people are going to put stuff in there to enhance their mechanical properties, to enhance their manufacturability. Inherently, when you manufacture PLA, let's say, you know, there probably would not be any residual chemicals in those. But what people would add to those as a manufacturer, you want to make parts faster, you want to make parts cheaper. You know, there's no way for us to absolutely say that that's going to eliminate it.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI. We're speaking with David Gruwell about plastics. Dr. Gruwell is the director of the Center for Bioplastics and Biocomposites, also known as CB Squared, which fosters collaboration between industry and research on plastics and issues related to them. I asked him to tell us about one interesting project that has come out of this center at ISU.
This is kind of a funny story. Two of our member companies, Ford Motor Company and Hyundai, are interested in lightweighting cars, right? They want to get the weight of the car down in order to get the efficiency up, get the miles per gallon up. And then we had another company, Diageo. And Diageo is a large alcohol producer, and not for fuels, not like Lincoln Way Energy here or REG, but they produce alcohol for human consumption. And one would not think that you would have Diageo being interfaced well with Ford Motor Company, right? You don't want to normally have automobiles and drinking alcohols combined. But Diageo does make tequila. And when you get done making tequila, you have agave fibers. And what we've been able to show is that you can take agave fibers and compound those with plastics and have a material that has a very high specific strength ratio compared to traditional composites. So typically in the automotive industry, they add glass fibers to plastics in order to increase their stiffness, increase their strength. But glass fibers have a couple disadvantages. One, they're relatively heavy. They have a high density. And secondly, they're relatively brittle. The agave fibers are not as strong, but they are relatively flexible. And so when you run them through a manufacturing facility, going through extruders, going through injection molding machines where they have to go around tortuous corners and rather tight flow patterns, they will not break, unlike glass fibers. On top of that, the agave fibers are relatively light. You put a piece of glass fiber in water, it sinks. You put a piece of agave fibers in water, and it floats. So its density is relatively low. And so what happened is we've been able to show that you can get about a 15 to 20% weight reduction in agave fibers from tequila production, put that into a car, and have that savings compared if it was just a traditional glass composite. And we have also shown that there's energy savings associated with that as well. So it's not just that the car sees a benefit as in terms of miles per gallon, but there's reduced cycle times. It's easier to make these parts. There's less energy that goes into them. So even like for Ford Motor Company and Hyundai, they have a savings and a reduction in greenhouse gases at the production facility.
Based on your experience in this field, what do you think the future is? I mean, do you think the future is going to be improved in terms of plastics everywhere in the environment and the negative impact that they are having?
Yeah, I mean, you already see it, right? California, a number of states are looking to outlaw straws. I'm not sure if that's necessarily the form I would gravitate towards. I mean, you go down along the beach and you do see straws along the beach line, but it's probably the number four, number five in terms of what the plastics are. It's more the trash bags, it's more candy wrappers, it's more food packaging and so on that's out there. But hey, if straws is what's able to get us to the point where we start to regulate and start to think as from a societal point that plastics need to be carefully monitored. We need to reduce them. The other R that's in the equation of reducing the amount of plastics we use because they just naturally do not break down.
Are there specific recommendations you would make for Ames or for the university in terms of their policies and approaches to dealing with plastics?
Well, I think, it does come back, trying to reduce. If we look at the food packaging industry, it's probably our biggest. You know, just the other day I was over on Duff and looked out into one of the cornfields, and this was just fully covered with, wind-blown trash bags and wind-blown grocery bags and so on. And so if anything we can do, and I guess it's great that when you come to the farmer's market on Saturday, they're handing out, the reusable bags. They're plastic, but they're reusable. And so anything that we can do to reuse plastics, whether it's the bag, whether it's to go to compostable or degradable utensils on campus or across town during events. There are actually even within the Big Ten, and I know that other conferences are doing it, they have a competition during football games, during sports events, to see who can use the most sustainable cutlery, the most sustainable amount of plastics that's used in terms of sustainability of what could be reused or recycled or just based upon corn or whatever. There is a huge amount of education component brought to it. I'm on the board of directors for the what used to be called SPI or Society of Plastics Industry, now just called Plastics. And one of our major efforts is to help educate the public, is to inform them about what's it mean to be biodegradable, what's it mean to be compostable. These are two different terms, and making sure that people understand what that means. What's it mean to be sustainable? What's it mean to be bio-based? Is it 100% bio-based? Is it 10% bio-based? And so the USDA has done a good job through that of defining what that means through the bio-preferred program. And so, I think that there's some efforts out there, but, trade associations like plastics and so on can help accelerate that.
Anything else that you would want to share with us about your work or what people should know about plastics?
Well, I don't think that we can, go out and say that plastics are bad, right? I mean, I tried to emphasize the fact that they're around us, everything we touch. And I look around the room here, probably 90% of what I'm looking at are plastics to some extent, whether it's the varnish on the wood or it's the clock or it's the paint on the metal or the headphones and so on. So they've served us very well. But if we can just be aware of how these materials are affecting the environment and try to be aware of trying to reduce our use and trying to look at what can we do in terms of using sustainable materials, and then making sure that once we're done with a plastic component, we consider about how we want to, you know, take care of its end of life. Do we want to have it be biodegradable? In some cases we do, or do we just want to be able to do what we do here in Ames to, for the most part, and burn these and capture the energy and turn on the lights with it?
This is Local Talk on KHOI. We've been listening to Dr. David Grewell from the Department of Agricultural and Biosystems Engineering at ISU, and he's been talking with us about plastics.
You can hear more interviews like this on Local Talk Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on 89.1 KHOI Community Radio. You can support Community Radio through the Donate button at khoifm.org.